listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast section. This is session number 26. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host here, and Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Doing good here. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well.
It's going on my side, OJ. I'm glad you're doing well. And now that the weather's starting to get a little hotter for us and starting to get really back to that St. Louis weather where it's just unbearable sometimes. Hopefully,
still a lot of rain, though. At least not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said. We got a little bit of rain out here in St. Charles area, but that was about it. Yeah, but it didn't really last all that long, but enough to cancel some softball games in the area and stuff like that. But we definitely need to get more rain, that's for sure.
Yeah.
OG, did you get any of the rain that came in?
Yeah, we got just a little drizzle. And, of course, that was the day I was driving down to the shop to get my sunroof repaired.
Oh, no.
So, oh, yeah.
To get the old trash bag out and everything. So.
Right.
Half-hour drive.
Damn, a half-hour drive to get that taken care of?
Yep, because where the insurance company wanted me to go.
Like the adjuster wanted you to go to. Yeah, I got you. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It could have been worse, though. You could have had a hole in, not the roof of your car, but the roof of your house. I have to say I'm very thankful that my new roof got installed today. Thank God for no rain. I was worried since we had rain yesterday that that was going to delay everything, but they put it, dude, they were super quick. They literally started at 6 and they were like done and like were cleaning everything up by like 1:30. Pretty impressive. You know, obviously I don't have like a huge size roof or anything like that, but pretty happy with how everything turned out.
Now it can start raining again. So I think there's a chance of it coming up on Sunday. So there you go.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Next week is going to be a lot of potential rain coming in, but anyways, let's get to something even more negative than rain. Let's talk about the St. Louis Cardinals.
Maybe we needed a few rain outs just to, you know, stop the misery. So,
man, like get something going. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, the Cardinals right now, not looking the greatest, right? I'm just going to go through this real quick. So this is the update since last session. Cardinals are once again on a huge losing streak. We're 26-37. We're 8 games behind in the Central, and we're in last, which is fifth, since there's only 5 teams down the Central. We're seven games back from the last wild card spot in the NL. We're 13th in the NL out of 15 teams, and we're actually tied with the Nationals, which have been a laughing stock since the year after they won the Commissioner Trophy. We're only half game ahead of the Rockies, which has been a laughing stock for I don't know like 30 years, but it's just fun, right?
At least they'll have a better record than the A's at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, that is true. Right? Well,
we're currently on pace
for like 30 wins, though.
we're on pace right now to win 67 right now. So.
Yeah, no, that'd be terrible. But the A's are like, they might have like the worst record of all time when everything's said and done. So.
I guess they're just going to bomb out before they move to Vegas, right? So there you go.
Exactly.
Well, it'd be kind of five. Exactly. Right. Reminds you of Stan Kroenke, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, we're not going to put money into a team to save money for a move and to make it so that nobody's interested at all. So we can just easily move this team.
Exactly. You know,
whatever.
Yep.
Trash.
Like, and the thing about it is it's kind of funny too. Speaking of Oakland and like being a Warriors fan, which is obviously where the Golden State Warriors is located. It's obviously in Oakland. San Francisco, Oakland area, really. There's just a lot of sports fans there. And even though there's no one showing up for these A's games, there's a lot of people that are out there boycotting the ownership of the A's and really obviously not trying to keep their team there. It's kind of crazy when you look at that, right? No one's showing up to the games, but people are obviously still trying to hold on to their team. And obviously, since we went through that losing the Rams, it really does make you feel bad for the people of Oakland. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And the Athletics honestly weren't all that terrible not too long ago. Like, if you go back 10 years, weren't they like in the playoffs and like one of the surprise teams that had a young roster, young nucleus that, you know, could have made a run?
Yeah. They have Tampa Bay Rays disease is the problem. As soon as anybody starts to get near any kind of contract, they trade them away. Yeah. Like, they're that kind of cheap. So, and they've always been. It's just they've also been successful like the Rays in the past, where they've done really good work with what little money they had. The baseball ops department, I mean. But, yeah, so this last year, basically, they had a bunch of guys coming up. So they said, on top of the move, you know, it might make a little bit of sense to sell off a bunch of guys and get more prospects. So people kind of knew the season was going to suck for them.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. Like, OJ, to that point, when a team is constantly doing that, of just trading away anything of value to get, quote-unquote, more prospects, at what point in time do you want to say, okay, we're actually going to be competitive? Because I feel like with the A's specifically, it's been that way at least for the past 7 years that I can see.
Well, they were competitive. I mean, they were in the playoffs multiple times somewhat recently. I mean,
no, but you see what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to have that consistency in trying to actually win like the AL West and stuff like that when you're constantly moving around your roster.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, it's hard for fans to really grow attached to players, because as soon as they get a talented young guy, and they know he's going to be good, and it's like, well, we'll enjoy him for like 3 years or whatever until he gets up for arbitration, and then we're going to have to look for the next one. It's kind of depressing.
And it's actually kind of funny, OJ, that you bring that point up, because I feel like we talked about that last session with the Battlehawks specifically, with, you know, all these, like, you know, a lot of, you know, Hakeem Butler, prime example. Obviously, Hakeem Butler dropped a lot of passes and stuff like that, but he was exciting to watch, big frame wide receiver. And led the league in touchdowns, but boom, he's gone. And you kind of feel that way every single time you're out there. You know, it's almost easier being a college football fan, because at least they'll be there for hopefully 2 to 3 years. You know what I mean? Or maybe even longer, depends.
Well, hopefully, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Not with the transfer portal now, and, you know, schools waving money around like crazy, but.
That's a very good point, too. But. Let's get back to, I guess, to the Cardinals here. After talking to some about the Athletics and some Battlehawks and stuff like that. So since our last session, the Cardinals played 6 games. They were 0-5 coming into the last game, where they barely squeaked out a 1-0 win by an Alec Burleson top of the 8th home run. And they won that game 1-0. Listen, a win's a win, but it's not been pretty for them. They're 1-5 in those games. Got swept by the Pirates and almost swept by the Texas Rangers, which, admittedly, the Texas Rangers are a pretty damn good team this year, but the sweep to the Pirates really hurts. So let's get to just some general opinions at this point in time. And I don't want to be a dead horse since we talk about this every week. But Adam, what's your thought process now, you know, with the Cardinals, especially after this 1-5 slide?
The problem is that it seems like Marmol is completely just oblivious to what the hell's going on. Because I don't know if you've seen, but I think it was after Monday's game, he was talking to, you know, to the press and basically saying, you know, talking to all the guys today, everybody seems pretty confident, right? But yet, Waino comes on, talks to the press, and he's telling everybody that is super frustrated right now. So it's like they're not even sending the same message. Clearly, the team is frustrated, and they're not getting – it's like he's not even able to read his own clubhouse at this point, you know? I mean, if this guy can't read his own clubhouse, why is he even managing at this point? You know what I mean? I hate to come back to that point again, but it seems that the dude, it just is incompetent being in the manager position right now. He's just too young and inexperienced, and he's not at all has his finger on the pulse here of what our team is saying. Or I don't even think he communicates with our team half the time.
Well, that's an interesting take. You know, OJ, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I honestly just think that Wainwright's being honest and Marvel's covering up, you know, like,
I guess a little bit.
You could also be, I guess you could kind of be frustrated and confident at the same time, maybe. Like, you're confident you're going to do better, but you're frustrated that you're having a tough season so far. I mean, I guess so. It doesn't have to even be mixed messaging, if you want to put it that way.
That's actually like a decent point, OJ. So like, it's a kind of like put this into, I guess, perspective, and not to continue to talk about it, because everybody and the listeners now know that I play softball and I'm very like to play softball a lot. But my team is pretty good, although this year we've lost three games. Last year we only lost one game through two sessions. And, you know, so it's been a lot of frustration. We've made a lot of like stupid errors and allowed teams to come back, or, you know, we just didn't get have like good hitting and stuff like that. Doesn't mean we're not confident, because we're still a really good team. Now, granted, we've only lost three games, and I think we're either in second or third. We're just used to being in first, and we're used to being just a very dominant team. So that's a very good point, OJ, that, you know, you could be confident, but still frustrated, because that's kind of how I feel like we've been. You know, we're still very confident as a team, but very frustrated, at least just at the results. But I want to go back to that, Adam, and I want you to kind of, you know, talk a little bit more when it comes to the inexperience of being a manager.
Before that, I said that, I just wanted to say something, because you all mentioned, you know, you mentioning about the frustration. If there is true frustration, which they claim that there is for sure, then why is it that we don't really see the passion then? You know what I mean? That's where I'm at. You know, it's like if I was frustrated, I would be furious. You know, I would be showing some emotion, you know, like, you know, you'd probably see me pissed off in the dugout or out on the field. You know, I would be very frustrated. And I know that good they're point. Professionals, but show a little bit of passion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I just want to say that, because I feel like the Blues were kind of the same way. Like, they were frustrated, but it's like they didn't give a shit anymore. You know, like there was no passion about it. You know what I mean? So I just want to mention that.
Me, the only person that's showing any of that passion is Nolan Arenado, who's just obviously, like, he's always been that way anyways. But you can see that he's got that frustration level to him. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very good point, Adam. You know, OJ, what's your thoughts on that as well? Do you wish that we were seeing a little bit more, you know, emotions flaring from some of these guys?
I mean, not really. I mean, I think we have seen a little bit from like Flaherty. I know he's shown some frustration at times, but to me, if you're in baseball, it's really important to channel your emotions properly, especially your negative ones. So like just getting super pissed and like you can't just like Hulk out or something, you know what I mean? You can't do like in a contact sport and just go mess somebody up. You gotta
That's a good point.
You know, you still need to be able to think clearly, and you know, you have to have your timing right and all that stuff too. And so if you're all pissed off, your timing's gonna be off and you're just gonna play worse. And I'm sure they all know that, because they've played for so long. So it's probably most of them are trying to fight the feelings of frustration, or at least channel it into more of a quiet intensity rather than like being outwardly mad about stuff.
That's actually a really good point too, because, and that's something I didn't really think about, OJ, was the fact that this is, it's a non-contact sport, but just how slow baseball is, period. So literally there's so much downtime between each pitch, even with the new pitch clock and stuff like that, that it's really hard to like harbor those emotions. And because if you're just going to be like angry and like the ball's not being hit to you or whatever, then that frustration is going to contain the mountain usually stuff, you know what I mean?
Usually you see those emotions come out though in the dugout. That's usually whenever I see a lot of the emotion come out. They come off the field. They're out of their moments or whatever. And then they get frustrated, you know, where they kind of show that, kind of get that anger or whatever. And I'm not saying, you know, being angry and hulking out is the right thing. It's just, it doesn't seem to be coming out, period, where in general, like the passion, you know, just in general. And I hate to attribute them to the Blues, where it just seems like they just stopped giving shit, but it just kind of, I don't know. It just feels like, you know, we're kind of training in that direction from time to time, where it just, I don't know. I'm just not seeing that passion, I guess, like we used to see.
Yeah. No, see, I'm kind of curious too, because like the symptom of whatever's going on is their current offensive approach. Like, you'll notice that not only have they not scored a lot of runs in many games over the last couple weeks, but they've also tend to go down pretty quick. I mean, like, you'll see like six pitches, you know, like that's how quick they're getting out. And it speaks to one of two things, in my opinion. It's either they're mentally checked out, like you're saying, Adam, and they're just going up there and just sticking the bat out there and hoping something good happens. Or they're pressing and they're trying too hard to do too much. And so they're trying to expand their strike zones and swing at stuff and do damage, quote unquote, right?
Right.
But it's one of those two things. I'm not sure which, but either they're panicking or they're mentally checked out. That's what I think it is. So if one of those two things could be, if that could be fixed, I think this team has the talent to be quite successful.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can argue that fact. When you look at this team on paper, this team at least, listen, it might not stack up to, you know, the Padres in San Diego or the Mets or the Dodgers and stuff like that, but definitely enough to win the Central, definitely enough to at least make a decent run into the playoffs, right? I feel that we all kind of felt that the winning the Central was like the litmus test for us. You know what I mean? Like, that was like the bare minimum that we should have been able to do with this roster, because we did last year. It's pretty much the same roster. You know, a few changes here and there, but that's kind of what we felt like coming into this. So it's a good point. You know, this team could turn it around, but it's going to be one of those things that we're obviously, they're going to just have to go on a serious tear and really find that rhythm really quick.
Yeah.
But let's get to that topic now. Because we've already kind of like been going around it here. Is it time to hit the panic button? Adam, let's start with you. I mean, do you believe that it's time to hit the panic button at this point?
I don't know if we're ready to hit the panic button completely, because it just seems to me that while we kind of go back and forth in swings here. So obviously our pitching was a problem for a while. And then, you know, our offense was doing pretty well, and now it seems to be kind of going in the opposite direction again, you know, sort of teeter-totter. It's just that we can't seem to align with everything, but I think that we have the components. It's just we're not working together, I guess. You know, we just can't seem to get all the pieces aligned here in general. It's not that we're completely falling apart. It's just that, you know, we just can't, you know, what I'm trying to say here is that,
for sure.
We have talent, you know,
It's
just, how do we get our team, you know, talking to each other, and how do we get back, you know, in sync with each other in essence. So I don't think we're ready to hit the panic button yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a good point.
Well, what I was going to say is that it's a pretty good point what Adam was saying. It's probably like it's not, you know, early enough, or it's not late enough, I guess I should say, to hit the panic button. But they definitely do need to start turning around soon. And that, like, it is kind of like it's a different part of the team kind of failing us every night. I mean, the offense has been bad for a while now, but even on nights where they went off, then maybe the starting pitching gave up too much, or the bullpen blew a lead late and all that kind of stuff. So it is kind of like somebody's always screwing up. It's like the opposite of what a championship club does, where somebody always steps up to find a way to win. Like, it's the opposite. It's crazy, but it's probably mostly just mental then, you know?
And it's actually really funny that you bring that up, OJ, because I literally had that written down in my notes that this is the exact opposite of a championship team, as you brought out. They're finding ways to lose games, not finding ways to win games. You know what I mean? So it's almost the exact opposite of what you want to have, especially at this point in the season.
Yeah. And to me, that is like, that could be seen as proof of pressing if they're too uptight, you know what I mean? Rather than not caring. But I really don't know either way which one it is, you know, jury's out. Well, I'm sure we'll find out eventually too. Someday, you know, there'll be a 30 for 30 on this team. Maybe.
Hopefully.
And then we'll figure out.
Well, and so in my opinion, I kind of already, you know, we talked a little bit about it. But I think that is, for me specifically, I do think that it's kind of time to hit the panic button. The reason why I say that is, listen, there's 99 games left. That's a lot of games. All right. But if we look at this objectively and just look at the realization, so the past two seasons to get into the playoffs, you needed 87 wins, right? And the season before that was 86. So it's really kind of, you know, getting around to 87 wins right around there. For this team specifically to do that, they would need to go 61-38. That's winning 62% of the remaining games. The reason why I say that, yeah, it's time to hit the panic button. For 63% or 63 games that we have played so far, our winning percentage is 41.3%. That means we have to go up 21% in 99 games. I just don't believe that's possible with this team. The way that they're playing, I just think it's too late. I think that this is my feelings on it. I believe this team will eventually go on a run, but it's going to be one of those things like, it's way too late. Like, it's not going to be too like late this lose year. In 2019. Yeah, I feel that, it, you know, like 2019 where they came out of nowhere. Because as much as we want to, like, I don't want to take anything away from that 2019 Stanley Cup Championship Blues team, right? But people need to understand what really coupled our huge, you know, meteoric rise is the fact that there was also teams like Winnipeg that really had a very, very bad second half. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Predators also didn't do all that well that year in the second half. And so it allowed us to catch up.
And we also like had a breakout goalie as well. You know, you break out star goalie, of course, as well. Yeah. And also a change in management. So there were some significant changes as well to our own team.
But
yes, to your point, there were outside forces
that allowed us to be in that position, because we could have had Binnington. And so, but we would have probably,
I was just going to say, prime example is for the Cardinals was in 2006. We only won 83 games that year, and we went on to win the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
yeah, you know, and we barely got into that. And so everyone's like, okay, cool. Well, we made the playoffs. And remember I remember in 2006 when we made the playoffs, how that felt like we just won the World Series.
I literally was at the very last game of the season that I was like, well, that's it. And you're like, and it's over.
Yeah.
I was like, well, it was nice. We made the playoffs, but that's it. Like, I won't be back.
Because it got us something excited.
A month later, I'm sitting there at game five and we're watching them win the World Series. But, you know, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I certainly don't feel it happening this year.
For sure.
Yeah. That's
I kind of already had moved past the season a little bit.
I think we all have.
I just wasn't panicking about a lengthy rebuild or anything. I don't think there'll be much of a need for a rebuild
because
they got good guys coming from the minors. I think they have the talent on the major league roster right now to compete for a World Series. It just things have been crazy this year for whatever reason. So I don't think it's like a close of a contention window or anything, you know. So
And that actually it brings it perfectly to the next question I had was, is this the exact same situation as the Blues, where you felt this was going to be a competitive team and then now we just got to trade all these players away, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and start on this one. I don't believe so. I think that is completely different. Baseball in general is different than you know, NHL. You don't have to worry about the salary cap and stuff like that. Yeah. I feel that we're pretty comfortable, at least with our payroll and where we're at. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with, you know, Bally and all that stuff. That's going to obviously really affect our ability to go out and get free agents and stuff. But just for this team in general, I'm not really like too concerned. I don't think it's at that point yet. If we continue to go on these massive slides, where all of a sudden, you know, like in 20 games, you know, we've lost 15 more games, then I think it's starting to get closer and closer to that. Okay, well, I think we're going to have to start trading some players away just because, you know, like we're going to have to do something at this point in time. But I don't think it's at that point yet. OJ, what's your thought process on that? I mean, do you believe that this is very similar to the Blues from this part of this season, or?
I guess it kind of has been that way, hasn't it? Like, it went through kind of a disastrous start. Then they looked like they'd figured it out. Similar to the Blues having that 8-game winning streak they had before they went on another losing streak and kind of tanked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is very similar. It's almost like they just copy-pasted a script or something, to tell you the truth.
Exactly.
But it's feel like
it's you have guys just playing bewilderingly bad. Like Arenado's not old enough to slump the way or to have dropped off the way he's dropped off. And I mean, his season probably look a lot better eventually, but I mean, Tommy Edman's been making mistakes in defensively. Arenado dropped a couple pop-ups the other night. Like it's just,
That doesn't ever happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's the season of the witch. That's what it is.
And that's actually a very good point too, OJ, they just brought up, because you're talking about the defensive side. This is something that the Cardinals have excelled at for the past 5 years, and actually well before that too, but just really in the past 5 years of getting awards and stuff like that, is our defense 100%. Has been in the top five, so if not the best, in MLB for the past 5 years. And all of a sudden now, if you look at our statistics, we're in the bottom 10. That's really a huge change from what it was and how it has been.
Even just from a couple years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Adam, what's your thought process on here? Do you see this correlation between the Blues?
Well, I definitely do. Like kind of what I was saying earlier, you know, I feel like there is some definitely with the Blues, and you know, especially where I'm not seeing the passion as well recently. Mm-hmm. And you know, to OJ's point about, you know, the how the season's been playing out, you know, overall. But at the same time, I don't think we're in a complete rebuild mode. You know, I think that we have great talent here, you know, and great talent coming up. I just don't think that we have it all pulled together here. And so, well, I think that we definitely need to make some changes. In my opinion, is probably make some changes in management as well. I think that we certainly do have some great talent though on our team. It's just that unfortunately this year is definitely not our year. You know, we're just used to winning. You know, that's the other part is, we're so used to the Cardinals, you know, always performing fairly well, at least pretty decent enough that we could always, you know, be very competitive in our division. And,
at least in the hunt. Yeah. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. But so this is the first year that this has really happened for us for a very long time, you know. So it's kind of a shock. But it is, you know, it is what it is. But I don't think we're in a rebuild mode yet, though.
And I definitely think that's a good point, Adam, that I think that's a very, like, it is a big shock compared to what we did last year when you end up winning the Central Division, but also to the emotional year we had, obviously saying goodbye to Pools, goodbye to Molina, but you also had a lot of success. And so that brought in people, like, again, I guess it just got in people's hopes that, okay, cool, we're already, so like, yeah, we're losing Molina, we're losing Pools, but we do have Goldschmidt still, we still have Arenado. You know, we have this young nucleus, you know, players, you know, Brendan Donovan obviously looked really good last year, too. You know that we're going to have two big prospects in Walker and Mace Wynn coming up as well. So you start feeling good about it. It's just to OJ's point earlier, if it's not one thing, it's the other. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's both. But, you know, sometimes starting pitching has been great, but our bullpen's letting it down. Oh, hey, our bullpen's been great, but our starting pitching sucks. So, you know, we're playing behind the eight ball. Hey, our pitching's been really good, but our defense hasn't been good. Players have not been able to hit the ball. And I feel really we have not been able to get into, like, we're just not getting those key hits and key moments either. We're leaving a lot of runners in scoring position, and that's just going to end up killing you as the season progresses.
Yes. Yeah, that's something else. It does make you kind of wonder if they aren't, you know, going away from some of the fundamentals that, as an organization, if they're not going away from some of the baseball fundamentals that have made them so successful in the past.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's just going to be, I don't know. Let's just play it this way, though. If it does happen where this ends up being the exact same season as the Blues and Mozeliak decides, hey, well, at this point, we're going to trade some players so we can ease up our payroll and stuff like that. Who do we see getting traded? OJ, let's start with you. I mean, do we see Goldschmidt? Do we see Nato being traded? Or is it kind of the same suspects that we were talking about before, like, you know, O'Neill, Jack Flaherty, stuff like
that? Yeah, I mean, so here's the deal. They do need pitching for next season, and it depends kind of how some of these guys finish the year, right? Like, excuse me. I still think they would like to trade O'Neill for sure. It'll be somebody they'll try and shop. I could see Flaherty. I guess it kind of depends how much they think he might be willing to come back next season. Because, I mean, there's no reason not to retain some of these guys. I was thinking about, you know, like Goldschmidt, maybe. I kind of doubt it. That might be a little too extreme. They may not want that publicity. Plus, I don't know that they'll do something like that to a guy that's that veteran unless he really is okay with being traded, you know. They usually respect people pretty well like that. All right, for the same reason, I think that takes Arenado off the table, because that would be really bad optics if the dude opts out of his contract and then next season you're trading him away after he said he wanted to be there. So, you know, they're not going to do Waino like that. That would be disastrous. So, I mean, you're thinking of the guys that are on expiring contracts. Jordan Hicks, I guess, would be one. You can probably
I think as well.
I guess the people that are most likely to be traded would be like Flaherty, Hicks, O'Neill. But yeah, it really
the usual depends. Suspects that we've been talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends whether the organization thinks that they're gonna be able to re-sign some of them too, though. Because I mean, Jordan Hicks has started throwing a four-seamer like 11% more. Like he threw like 1% last season. Now it's like 12%, something like that. And it's not much, but now he's got three pitches that all have like a 40-something percent whiff rate, and he's looking untouchable since he made that change. So I mean, he could become a very, very valuable pitcher.
Yeah, and I will so and kind of drawing some correlation to that. So I remember when I was pitching, you know, this is obviously when I was real young and stuff like that. So it's not the same, obviously, but just to try to get into the mindset of that, I was struggling when I got the mound, right? So between seventh and eighth grade, they went from no mound or what they call a bump, you know, just like that little mound that's raised off. Off the ground. But then in eighth grade, they actually have like a mound, like a full-on mound that you use in MLB and stuff like that. Bases are get a little bit longer, but it's a really high mound, and that screwed me over. My delivery and stuff like that was completely thrown off. I couldn't figure it out. I focused solely, ironically, on the four-seam fastball. I was a two-seam fastball, curveball slurve guy. And I also had this pitch that was, I called it a circle change, but it was kind of more of like a screwball the way I threw it. But I couldn't figure out any of my pitches. So I changed from a two seam to a four seam and just taking some velocity off and working on more accuracy and as well as that sinking action allowed me to figure out the release point. And it was too late for me to kind of figure out for that quote unquote that eighth grade season. But I was starting to figure it out towards the end of the season. And I feel like something to that point, what you just brought up, OJ, that, you know, you get a pitch and all of a sudden that starts hitting the mark. You feel more confident, but now you can lean on that pitch to be like your lead pitch and then go to these other weapons that you feel that you can hit every once in a while. And Hicks has obviously been on a roll. And this is what we thought he would be, right? Coming in the season, not giving up, you know, seven runs, you know, in three outings. Whatever it was at the beginning of the season. So that's a very good point as well.
Well, yeah, and you could also argue that besides that, it also a four seamer probably generally plays a little better with the slider than the two seamer did. Sure it does. Because the four seamer has a rise. I mean, that was the theory people had on why his contact rate has been so high in the past, even though he has such great stuff. It's because the two seamer and the two seamer has like a drop to it a little bit. So it's kind of like running into people's bats, you know what I mean? Whereas now he starts throwing that four seamer, you know, so now he's making his other stuff all play better. And, you know, so he's looking like he might be the new closer for us.
Okay. And you bring up some really good points for sure. And I think that it's, again, kind of the, it's just kind of the same suspects, at least I agree with you. You know, Neil Hicks, Flaherty, these are kind of the names we've been talking about. Adam, what's your thought process here? Well, I mean, is there anybody specific that you think?
Yeah, before I get into actual names, so looking at some needs that we have here, obviously starting pitching, we need a good, strong outfielder, and we need a reliever. We need some relief in the bullpen as well. Obviously, we do have some talent coming up, you know, for pitching, which is great. However, like I said, we still have some needs. And obviously the first thing we look at is who has expiring contracts. You know, we've got Montgomery, we've got Flaherty, we've got Hicks, we've got DeYoung. And I know with like 1 year left, we've got O'Neill and Gold and all them. So when you start looking at them, I would obviously try to sign and keep Montgomery. I think that we could probably get something for Flaherty, for Hicks, for sure. I would like to keep DeYoung if we can, but if we can, you know, if we have to be able to get some leverage, wouldn't mind, you know, if putting him in for, you know, putting him in the mix, it wouldn't be a bad, you know, mid-level prospect for sure. Obviously with Goldie, I would definitely want to keep him, and I think he wants to stick around for long-term as well. But when it comes to O'Neill, I think we have, you know, an opportunity to trade him, especially now that he's been injured as well. So I think, that's where I'm at on this, is if we could try to land a decent starter Maybe somebody, you know, somebody in the bullpen for sure, and potentially, you know, a good solid outfielder would be great right now for us.
It does make you think too, that if we would have signed a pitcher or traded for a pitcher at the beginning of the season, like especially a starting pitcher, if we could have got, you know, maybe not an ace, but like a, you know, high end rotation guy, like a, you know, a guy that can be a number one, a number two, you know, what that would look like if we, if this team would look any different or not. But I believe I agree with you, Adam, that that's actually a very good point too. When you're looking at who's going to get traded, what is our needs? Cause it's not like, okay, cool, we're just going to dump all these players and really not fill our needs. And if, this is not going to be a dig a Doug Armstrong, cause in Armstrong we trust, but I kind of felt that way when it was like a fire sale, right? Getting rid of Barbie, getting rid of O'Reilly, getting rid of Tarasenko. It's just like, but we still have needs now. Like, because you're not getting rid of anything on the blue line, and all this frustration and money going towards our blue line. Our blue line is terrible, you know. So like, what's the
point? How is this improving us?
All the offensive talent. So that's to me why I was very frustrated. I get it. We don't know what these picks are going to be and stuff like that. But I've been very a big component. We got three picks coming in the first round for the Blues. One of them is, you know, the 10th overall pick, one away from like one, you know, number, whatever, away from Connor Bedard. But let's, again, be honest, the NHL was going to give it to, you know, Chicago anyways. But then we have two other ones, right? But those two in the first round are late first rounders. They don't mean anything to me because we're not going to be getting, I don't care how deep this is. You're not going to get a guy that's going to be able to come in and make a complete impact. I could obviously be wrong. I mean, Pavel Datsyuk was a seventh round pick, but stuff like that happens very, very rarely compared to when you have these really high end picks and stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. So, and obviously the MLB it's so much more different too, because you know, you got the minor leagues and stuff like that. You have international play, but you could draft a player and then they just don't, you know, turn out to be anything. The draft for the MLB is so weird. So I think that if you are going to be trading away players and stuff like that, you better like have that idea and the ideology of like who you're going to be trading for and what you need. And I think that that's something that they're going to have to figure out as well, especially if this, the Cardinals team continues this slide for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me here to my last question about the Cardinals and specifically here, but do we believe that the Cardinals can turn it around? OJ, let's start with you. I mean, do you believe the team can turn it around, or do you think, again, it's just too late?
I think that they can turn it around, but it's also going to take – I mean, they're not in the driver's seat, obviously. Yeah. I mean, I also don't know that it is likely to turn around simply because I think that there's some – management issues most likely behind this. That's, but it's pure speculation. But I think that they don't put their best team on the field every day, even though they're in a desperate situation. Marmol manages the bullpen much too lackadaisically, not with enough urgency, I should say.
Yep.
Agreed. Given the, I mean, if we're 10 games up in the division race, then you manage your bullpen like Ollie Marmol does. But, like, we need every win desperately. So, like, you can't just throw Giovanni Gallegos out there and just cross your fingers he gets it done. Like, if he starts throwing to guys and he's obviously got no command and then four-pitch walks the first batter, maybe you should get somebody else up right then and there instead of waiting for him to blow the lead, you know?
That's a very good point that I actually heard from some of the guys I play softball with. They were talking about that specifically with the bullpen and with Marmol. You know, he's playing like they were, like he's playing, but he's managing like this team is last year's team. You know what I mean? Like they're in the hunt. They're in the lead for the Central Division, and they're not. So it's a very good point.
Yeah.
And say what you will about La Russa, I felt that La Russa was incredible. It was just an incredible manager that can handle a bullpen in any situation, was very smart about his tactical decisions when it comes to obviously a Hall of Famer. You know, that's not really fair to put that in comparison to Marmol, but it's just, it is what it is. And that's kind of what we're used to with Cardinals baseball. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that's a very good point. You know, and I think that some of that does come from the inexperience that you brought up, Adam, as well. You know, just not having that understanding of when to bring people in. But we talked about this as well in a different session, that there's times when it, you know, like no one's warming up, and it's like clearly this pitcher is struggling. Mm-hmm. My body language, but I, like, you can tell they're frustrated.
It's like, come on.
Frustrated, and no one's warming up. It's like, well, what do you do? Because now you have to be smarter about this, because they're at a pitch clock. So you can't just be like, okay, hey, we're you know, like,
yeah,
just
delay, take your time whatever.
With this one bat. Yeah, yeah. Like, whatever you want to do. Anymore. You can't do any of that. So you've got to be smarter about this. And
that's the part I have a problem with him, is I feel like sometimes he's not sticking his head outside of the dugout, you know, out of the dugout much, you know, just like he just doesn't seem connected to what's going on out there. So,
yeah. I think some of that, honestly,
on
him, but
seriously, come on.
And who's our new our new pitching coach? I forgot his name.
Dusty Blake.
Yeah. So, and I think that some of that's on Rusty too. You have to be
Dusty. Yeah.
Just
Dusty
to be Blake, clear. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No worries. Well, he's Rusty at this point, right? The entire pitching staff
is Dusty. Anyways, Rusty.
Dusty. But if you're Dusty, you're in that position for a reason. I don't care, you know, if you're going to cause any friction here. I mean, you have to have some pulse on it as well. And you got to be, obviously, you can get over, you know, overridden, but you got to tell him, listen, you know, Ollie, we can't keep doing this. Like, you need, like, all right, well, he clearly doesn't have it tonight. Marmo, do you want me to get somebody else up? You know what I mean?
And unfortunately for him, he doesn't really have all that much experience either, you know?
No, I know. And
he doesn't have any experience in the majors other than with us, you know? So he was a pitching coach for, you know, last year, and that's been about it. So,
yeah. The last time he was a pitching coach was for Duke, where they can just out recruit people.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep. Being a bigger team. So the thing about that, and it's when you watch them and they're showing Ollie in the bullpen, they're showing Blake, they don't communicate. They're not talking. You see that a lot, you know, especially with Maddox. Maddox was phenomenal at that. He was always in the ear. It didn't matter if it was Schultz, if it was, you know, Marmol, he was always in the ear of the manager, and they're just talking about the game. Sometimes they're just joking, like having a good time. They're just talking, but you know they're talking about, man, his pitch is on tonight. He's watching the game and fully understanding. I feel that Marmol and Blake are kind of waiting for each other to, like, make that, like, that decision, or that, oh man, maybe he doesn't have it tonight kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I don't know if I'm reading too much into it or not, but that's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I don't know, honestly. I mean, I'm wondering whether it's Ollie Marmol that's at fault for this, or the front office. Like, I don't know if it's Mike Schilt used to do his own thing more of, and now they really are just like, no, Ollie, we're setting the lineup for you. We're telling you exactly how to handle your pitchers. I don't know which it is, but whichever one it is, that needs to be gone. So either Ollie Marmol needs to be fired, or the front office needs to butt out of on-field decisions, because that's not their job and it's not their expertise. Like, if you went to school to be a financial analyst, you should not be managing a baseball team. You're not qualified, okay? Not to manage a professional MLB team. So whatever that is, it's not working. It needs to stop. And I don't know the cause, though.
And that's a very good point too, OJ, because I feel that that has been a little bit of the frustration with the Cardinals. And even because I think it's a microcosm of what this team is, right? It's too good to be having these kind of problems over and over. So it's like, okay, well, where's the issue? Well, I have no idea, because it's like, seems like they're scattered all across the board, but you can't put your thumb on it. You know what I mean? Because you don't know what the front office is doing. You don't know what they're saying and stuff. And that's a good point.
Exactly.
And because Marmol is going to always be the person to blame, since he is the management, but you don't know what the management itself is saying to him. So, you know, that's a very good point as well. You know, Adam, what's your takes on that? Do you have, you know, any input on that maybe, you know, it could be a little bit of the management and the front office?
It definitely is 100%. Yeah, absolutely. It is. I think that there's a lot to do with the management with what we're seeing, for sure. I think that's part of the problem, is that I think the guys out there are, you know, they're solid talent. It's just that, like I said, I really feel like a lot of it's just that not have your finger on the pulse of what our team, what our needs are, and and having that experience as far as, you know, how to get us back into, you know, communicating with each other and working as a team.
It's actually a very it's an old saying, but it's so true, right? It's easy to coach when you're winning. It's really hard to coach when you're losing.
Sure.
And I feel like that's some of what we're seeing now. You know, Marmol is really struggling because what he is known is success. And what was successful for him last year is definitely not this way this year. But that's when the front office.
He also had some help too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last year he had some help, whereas this year he's kind of on his own, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. The front office needs to be able to help him, extend some lifelines to him and stuff like that. For sure.
You're right.
It was funny. I did read an article. I think it actually was Bernie Miklas. I could be wrong, so I apologize for misquoting. But it talked about how Matt Halliday knew that this was coming, and that's the reason why he decided to back out of the hitting coach position.
Really?
I don't necessarily believe that's true, but it kind of is funny when you look at the correlation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that any article like that would be just speculation unless you're actually talking to Matt Halliday. So.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just funny how, like, because it's like one of those things that, you know, it's speculation, but then all of a sudden you go, oh, wait, that actually kind of makes sense a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it just takes you back for a second.
Well, give him a call and see what he says.
Right. Exactly.
People have definitely been suspicious about that for sure.
Yeah. As they should be. You know, again, as we said, we just can't put our thumb on it. So. Well, let's get to a positive note for STL Sports here. Let's talk a little bit about STLSC.
Let's go.
So I can say officially to the listeners, Adam and I went to a game this past week. It was freaking amazing.
It was awesome.
If anybody,
I'm ready to go again.
I know. Like, I'm so in. Like, it was awesome. I was like, I didn't want to spend money. But I end up buying a jersey down there and stuff like that, you know, the replica or whatever. But, you know, like, I'm like, dude, I have to have it. Like, it was such a cool environment, cool experience to have. It is a little bit more expensive, but maybe not this year.
It's a really cool stadium. Really cool.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. I feel that everybody's got to get down there at some point.
It really is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was totally worth it. It was a really cool experience. Yeah. OJ, obviously, you saw the pictures that I sent you. I know the video I sent you was terrible, but you could see where we're at. We had great seats. It was just a really cool experience. It really was.
Yeah. And that's right win as well. So
yeah, exactly. That's right up there. Honestly, see, because I've seen Barcelona play, I've seen Real Madrid play, obviously here in the States. But like I've seen some teams, big teams play, and it was right up there with that experience. You know, but I could feel the hometown pride coming from like the supporter section, and honestly, like. They're goofy, but I like our chance. Like,
yeah, I do too.
I like our chance. Yeah.
They have fun, you know, that's for sure. Those guys they're very passionate, you know, the St. Louis-igans. And, you know, they've been around obviously for a while, but they are, you know, they have a huge passion for soccer and, you know, they're just a great group of people that, you know, really help support the team. And you can tell, you know, St. Louis is a soccer town. I mean, if I know, obviously this is the inaugural season, obviously it's the hot ticket in town per se, but knowing how St. Louis is, you look at St. Louis and you've watched these games and you see how many people are packing the stands. We're sold out every single night compared to pretty much all other, you know, MLS cities out there. We just really see the passion, you know, in St. Louis. And I think we're going to continue to see that for years to come for sure.
I believe so as well. I mean, it's been really good to see so far. I mean, just everyone was down there just having a good time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were there before the game. The place is a really cool area to hang out. And again, I think that it's, you know, youth soccer is so big in St. Louis to have that now as a professional. And for now, those youth players can see the product, which is something that didn't happen. You know, it's like, oh, well, you have to watch, World Cup or international soccer to see what I could potentially be.
Yeah.
And it feels so disconnected. Now you can almost put your thumb on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And after the game, after the win, how many autographs were they signing?
Oh, you know my God. They were loving it. They were out there with the fans. Yeah. They were grabbing everybody's phone and getting selfies and autographing and just chilling with people. In fact, some of them were kind of tagging way behind and they had to rush up there with the rest of the group with the rest of the team, because they were too busy, you know, hanging out with the fans, loving it. Yeah. So could you imagine, you know, some of the guys that are young, you know, like Miguel Perez, for example, you know, the kid's 18 years old. And imagine, you know, some of these guys looking at, you know, somebody who went to school at Pattonville here in St. Louis and now is playing, you know, MLS level, you know, he's playing in MLS. And, you know, this is a pretty cool. It gives a lot of inspiration to the youth of St. Louis, especially those into the sport.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was pretty funny listening. So OJ, have you been able to hear some of the chants at all on TV, or does that not really get picked up?
I mean, you can hear them really well, but you can't tell what they're saying.
So I'll tell you the one that I was always wondered what it was, but it's to the tune of "We're not going to take it," you know, we're not going to take it. So we're St. Louis City.
We're St. Louis City. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Who are you? Yeah. It's so good at the same time. But it's perfect for St. Louis. You know what I mean? It's like borderline comedic in how bad it is, but we're so passionate about it. It's good. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tune, like to the tune of like, will you be my girl? It's like, you know, it's like, hey, would you score my goal, or would you score the goal or something?
Yeah,
like
it's
that?
All we really want is goals, ripping the net. We want goals. Yeah, from the floor, we want goals. From the bench, we want goals. Goals, 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 you know.
Yeah.
From the Beastie Boys, yeah. Instead of girls, it's goals.
But again, it was a really good time. So let's take a look a little bit here on STLC and just get some quick updates. So at the season, there are 9 wins, 1 draw, and 5 losses, total 28 points. They actually have a goal differential of plus 16, which is the best in the MLS.
Let's go.
We are the number one team still after losing the Dallas 2-0. That was our recent that happened on Wednesday, so yesterday, right? Yep. Yeah. That was our recent results, but we're still number one in the West. We're number 4 in the MLS, and power rankings have us at number 5. It's pretty crazy. So when you look at the playoff, which is kind of like the goal is to get to that 47-point plateau, we're only 19 points away. We have 19 games remaining. So for us to get to that 47-point plateau, we have to go 6-1-12 for the season. I definitely think that's
we've got that.
For us. Yeah,
definitely.
Literally, if we tie every single game, we'll get to that point, you know. So I definitely think that we can win more than 6 games this season. I'm very, very happy with you know, STLSC. You know, I'll start with you, OJ. Is there anything that's kind of, you know, jumped out to you, or is it just kind of the same stuff that we've talked about before in different sessions about this team?
Well, I mean, now they kind of, I don't know, they had a couple pretty good wins there without Klaus. I know they lost to Dallas. I unfortunately missed that one because I didn't know what was going on. It was a makeup for earlier in the season. And I guess it didn't show up on my phone or whatever.
It caught me by surprise too, because it was supposed to start early in the day, and then it got postponed. So I didn't know what the hell it was for. Then all of a sudden, I looked at my phone when I was watching the NBA game, and it was 2-0. I'm like, man, we're already down 2-0. Well, maybe we can come back. Oh, it's final? Like, what the hell? When did that game
start? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, that could stand to be like advertised a little better, I guess. But anyway, I didn't see how they lost that one. I just know that the rain delayed one, it was like 0-0 after half. So I don't know how they gave up 2, but it was a weird situation. Either way, like, when Klaus comes back, this team's going to be really scary, I think.
Go on, OJ. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think they do a pretty good job of like connecting with the city too. Like,
they do.
I just think, you know, it's really cool to see. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm appreciative of that, you know? So when you see the Cardinals, which kind of feel like they're going through the motions, the Blues definitely went through the motions. Then you have this young team that has the exact opposite, where they have the passion and they want to be around the fans. They want to be a part of that. It's just a fresher breath air. You know what I mean? Not only are they winning, but, you know, cause let's be honest. I do believe this team can make a deep run in the playoffs, but I don't know if they have the experience to be able to win it all. I don't know if they'll be able to hoist the MLS Cup at the end of the season just because of the inexperience to it. but they're at least going to try their absolute
hardest.
They're
going to go make a run for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you want, to put your,
that's all that matters at this point.
You're putting your cart behind that horse because they're going to die trying rather than being like, nah, I kind of want to play some golf. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, these guys are enjoying it, and I think they want to experience as much as they can, you know.
Well, and it's actually funny too. So Klaus, I think when he was talking about it, like, because he got activated to come back and start training with his team after the quad injury and stuff, he was talking about, you know, St. Louis City, and how he's like, wow, it kind of feels like another home, and that he already apparently got offered to come back to Brazil to play in the league down there, and he rejected it. A, he's making more money up here. Mm-hmm. But B, because he feels connected to what we're doing here and connected to the city. And that's, you know, and so that's really cool to hear a professional player say something like that. And especially for a brand new team. So it gives you hope that not only can we continue this and create a culture here, but maybe go out and get, you know, a big name player that wants to come over from overseas, which is a perfect segue to the fact that Lionel Messi is now coming to MLS. See what I did there? Every once in a while,
There we go. Before we move off of that, yeah, I just wanted to mention an update on Klaus, is that I was just reading, apparently he'll be out for another couple of weeks, but hopefully he will be returning in a couple of weeks. So just FYI to our listeners. So
thank you.
Yeah, they did say he had a setback. So, and I understand that. And so again, like this quad, man, I went back and played softball this past week. And I felt fine, but I was so nervous going up to that point. And then my leg was sore the next couple of days. So, you know, and I know that he playing soccer is going to be way, and especially at that level, is way more strenuous than what I'm going to do on my leg. But man, I just feel so bad for him, especially with these
bodies.
I've just been exposed to it now. You know, there's not something to mess with. So anybody out there listening, I don't care if you're a young kid. I don't care if, you know, you're 70, if you're playing a sport, please, please, please do us all a favor. Please stretch. Don't be that person that does not stretch, man. Please, because I can tell you, I was a person that never stretches, and I never stretched when I went to play hockey ever. I just jumped on the ice and never stretched. I promise you, I will never, ever do that again because I cannot, like, not have my leg walk on, or it's simple stuff. You know, Adam, as I talked to you before, especially, you know, outside the podcast, just cutting my grass. I couldn't cut my grass, and I don't even have a hill. You know what I mean? It just hurts that much to be able to push on the lawnmower. So you just take care of yourselves out there. But
definitely.
Anyways, let's get to that big news here of Messi coming to MLS and what that means to the MLS. I just kind of want to get our first, you know, overall impressions here first coming into it, and then we can kind of dive into a little bit more. You know, OJ, what's your thoughts on Messi coming now to MLS?
I mean, I think it's pretty neat. It's pretty crazy, and definitely good for to get him. What I don't like with that kind of thing is the whole little rule where basically every other team in the league, or did they do that? Maybe I'm misremembering. Nope. Okay,
they rejected that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I was pissed about that.
The MLS. So it's weird. The MLS. From my understanding, because there's been a bunch of different things around it, because obviously this all happened today and it's been very fast acting. But the MLSPA declined it. So the players association, players union declined it. The MLS approved it. The owners also declined it, though. So, no, it doesn't sound like everybody's chipping in to make this giant salary happen.
That's good. That's good. Because, I mean, to me, that makes your league look like a fucking joke. If you got people paying for the other team to have a good player, like, why would anyone ever take that seriously?
Yeah, because it's like, I get it that it's like having Michael Jordan, you know, play in like this men's, you know, it's not really the same because obviously these guys are professional. I don't want to take away what they do, but you know, you're going to pay a bunch of money to have like, you know, Michael Jordan come play in the G League so it can have like some name recognition, you know what I mean? Or LeBron James or something like that. I think that would do the exact opposite of what you would want that to do. You know what I mean? Exactly. So I think that's a very good point that you brought up, you know?
Yeah, because, like, on the one hand, everyone in Argentina, you know, is going to be watching MLS because, like, that's how crazy they are about Messi. But, I mean, they're not going to take the league seriously. Like,
That is true. They're just watching it because of Messi. You know?
Yeah, as soon as he retires, they're going to stop watching. So it's not like it's really bad for the long-term growth, even if it would get temporary eyeballs on it.
Right. Well, Adam, what's your thought process here? I mean, what's your thoughts on Messi coming?
I was really surprised to hear it because obviously, you know, he was offered that, you know, $400 million, you know, deal linked up with that Saudi club, you know, and for him to take a deal of only like 54 mil per year over 4 years, it was like, wow, that's, you know, he's really, you know, taking quite a discount, you know, or basically come play in the MLS. And I was a bit surprised by that, but I did hear as well that he's going to get some, obviously some sponsorship deals out of from Apple and Adidas and a few others. But obviously I think him and David, of course, you know, they played against each other, you know, and obviously they have a long history. So I think it'll be a great thing that, you know, David was able to get him to sign with MLS. We already are seeing the Messi effect when it comes to the MLS. Tickets alone are just through the roof. I mean, and there's no even guarantee if he'll even play in some of these games. But, I mean, St. Louis City alone, those tickets are the cheapest seat I can find, which is not even a seat, is $200. And that's from the, you know, in the supporter section. Well, so $200 to go. Yeah. General admission to go stand, you know, for 90 minutes. Well, actually longer than that. But, you know what I mean? Like for a couple hours to go stand and watch this game in general admission is $200. And that's just right now. And there's no guarantee that he'll even be playing, you know, at that point. He may.
Yeah. But in fact, for the game against STLSE, they're saying it will not happen. That's what they're projecting. They're saying that he will not play for MLS until August because he is going to be taking a mini vacation for like a mini offseason. He's going to come in and with a team for Inter Miami so he can get, you know, in Messi, like, I'm not a Messi fan. I'm more of a like Cristiano Ronaldo guy. Although Ronaldo now is like really annoying the hell out of me because like he just makes it all about himself, which I cannot stand. But at least the thing I can say about Messi, he's always been a team guy. So he's definitely going to make sure it's not going to be like, hey, I'm going to come out here and just give the ball to me, funnel the ball to me. You know, it's not going to be the Will Ferrell movie Kicking and Screaming where you just pass to the Italians the entire time, right? He's going to make sure that like he's a part of that team. And so they're going to have what they call like a mini boot camp. So he's going to be, you know, doing a lot of stuff. They're saying that he most likely won't play in an MLS game until at least August, probably mid-August is what they're saying. Now, obviously that's all subject to change, but you know, who knows at this point in time, but
as your point,
I mean, like the effect is already there that people are buying tickets just so they can, you know, like even catch a glimpse of him sitting on the bench. You know, so it's going to be interesting. I wanted to bring up.
Well, you know, it is huge for that. It's just kind of crazy, though, the fact that he turned down such an incredible deal, you know, with that Saudi league. You know, that's where you mentioned, you know, Ronaldo. I think he went to that same league.
And so here's the thing.
Benzema and all those guys went over there. But anyway, go ahead.
I think that Messi coming to MLS is going to be like Jordan in the NBA. He's not going to have that overall effect because Jordan, when Jordan came into the NBA, obviously his impact was well beyond basketball at that point in time. But he put the NBA on a global scale. There were, you know, all of a sudden Serbia started paying attention to basketball, and now they have like phenomenal basketball players that are in there. You know, Joker is trying to win right now, but Luka Doncic is also a guy that's phenomenal. It put the game on a global scale, and everybody knew the Chicago Bulls. Everybody knew Michael Jordan. Like you go up to anybody now, anybody that like young kids, you know, that doesn't know the, you know, that knows the game a little bit or whatever. You ask, hey, what was Michael Jordan's number? They'll tell you 23, just because they know. Messi is going to have that type of impact where it's going to there's going to be a huge rush on trying to see Messi, and kids are going to be inspired to it. And here's the other thing about it. It's going to want to bring players from overseas back to MLS to play with Messi. Why the hell wouldn't they? They already asked Suarez, who was his longtime Argentinian Argentinian national team teammate, if he would come in. Luis Suarez was like, no, I can't, like, I can't do that. I already have, like, you know, contract obligations here in the Argentinian League, but other players, especially young players, are going to be like, well, I'll take the chance of going to MLS. And I think that it's just a perfect time for Messi to come over here, because there's already been two expansion teams, Charlotte and then us. There's already going to be another one now, San Diego. They're talking about potentially two more as well coming down the pipeline. So I think this is just the perfect thing for it. Messi isn't the first big international soccer star to come over to MLS, but I think he's going to have the biggest impact, right? And I'm going to go on a little bit
of a rant. Yeah, I mean, it's like Beckham did, obviously, you know.
Right, and that's actually what I want to talk about. I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant. I know I kind of already went on it, but I just kind of want to explain the reason for it. So, like, Beckham was one of the first guys that came over here, really, actually, the first major, name to come over. He came over to L.A. For Galaxy in 2007 at the age of 32. He played 98 games over several stints, and with 18 goals and 38 assists. The thing about Beckham, he didn't really have a very successful time in the MLS. He won two MLS Cups or whatever, but he came into the MLS and immediately went over to Inter Milan on a loan. He then came back to LA after the loan was over, and people in LA were telling him to go back home fraud. I remember that. You know, they had signs. They did not want him there. So where does he go? He goes back to AC Milan. Then he comes back to Galaxy again and brings him two cups, and then decides to retire after that. I mean, he played a decent amount in the MLS, obviously playing 98 games, but his impact was, because he didn't stay, really had it wanted it, like, it left it wanting. You know what I mean? I remember when he was coming over, it was such a huge deal for MLS, but he just couldn't stay healthy. He really didn't have the production, and people stopped caring as much. The second player came over was Wayne Rooney, the English striker. He came over to MLS in 2018 at the age of 33, played 48 games for DC United with 23 goals and 15 assists. He had some successful runs there, but he was also a little bit older. Gareth Bale came into MLS in 2022, so last year at the age of 33, only played 12 games and only scored two goals. When you look at those three options before Messi, here's the thing that I want to say about it. None of those three players had the contract offers that Messi had, and then he chose MLS. Beckham didn't have any contract offers. I mean, he was literally coming from Real Madrid, but nobody wanted him because they thought that he was too old and he had injury problems. So he goes to, you know, MLS, and then AC Milan was like, hey, well, we have some interest in him now that he, but is alone. They didn't want to buy that contract, right? They didn't want him to come over full time. Which obviously he didn't. Messi had a contract offer not only from the Saudi Arabia League, like you brought up, Adam, but from Barcelona as well. And so for him to choose MLS in that situation, that means the world. And I think he's going to have much more of an impact. Obviously, he's a bigger name than all the three players that I've already mentioned, even including Beckham. But I think that him choosing MLS because he believes that he's going to have his future in his hands, that's not only going to open up the ideology for other players to be like, you know what, MLS is a little bit more of like, I'm in control compared to playing in La Liga or the Premier League or Series A or what are the Bundesliga, whatever, you know, one of these major major leagues are. So I think that you know, it's going to be great. It is kind of funny that he said in his interview the reason why he chose to come to MLS and enter Miami is that he went to more focused on family life and stay out of the spotlight. Well, here you are, the one of the biggest soccer players in the world coming to MLS, which is, like, let's be honest, kind of the minor leagues compared to the world soccer. You're of course going to be in the limelight. So yeah. I don't know what that decision went into that. You know what I mean? But yeah. You know, hey, it is what it is. There is less pressure, obviously, playing in MLS compared to playing in Europe and La Liga and stuff like that. So
true.
That's the end of it. All right, go on.
Yeah, sorry. Just saying that's what is cool about the St. Louis team also, you know, because pretty much a lot of the guys there probably would rather be playing in some other league, but they're still still, you know, have the playing with fire and passion and stuff in this lower league, you know. So
yeah, and you know, they could use it as a leapfrog opportunity and kind of do what we were talking about with the Battlehawks, where they could be gone.
Yeah.
You know, in a year after the, you know, proving ground, stuff like that. But you hope that they decide to stick around because there's some success that they're having and that they fall in love with the culture. And it sounds like in some ways it might not be to that point where they'll deviate or deny a La Liga contract or something like that. But maybe it's heading that direction. We don't know. We'll have to see how it kind of, you know, happens. But I think that, you know, with MLS and what, when we had Danny on and he was talking about how the players were just blown away by the, not only like how easy it was to like find housing and stuff like that, but the, like the amenities of the stadium, like the actual equipment that's there and stuff like there was rivaling also, those of right like a national stadium.
Yeah. And obviously right across the street, our practice facilities, everything else. So
yeah. Yeah. One area rather than having to go across town to play. So I think that's a very good point. So, you know, we'll have to see how this, you know, how Messi comes into this one here and, you know, kind of, you know, it makes his impact in MLS, but I'm excited.
It'll be huge for sure.
Yeah, I'm not excited to take on Messi, but I'm excited for what he could potentially do for MLS.
That's the other thing too. Obviously, he's coming into a team that's not very good. So, just saying.
Yep.
They're last place, I think, in the East. So there you go.
Correct. Yeah. So you're gonna put a Gegen Press on him and put like four people just surrounding him.
I guess.
That's what you gotta do. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's get going. Sorry.
Oh, nothing. No. Just because Messi doesn't go get the ball. You bring Messi true too. The ball.
You bring the ball.
You bring Messi the ball. We talked about that in the World Cup. Yeah. And how he just is like waiting for the ball to come to him. So you just make sure that the lanes get taken away. Although he's pretty sure in finding openings. But yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's transition here. Talk about the NHL playoffs here at this point in time. Game three is happening right now. I believe the Panthers are up. Are they not? I think they were up 1-0 when I last checked. But in the game three, obviously,
so the Knights are leading 2-1 right now, but in the end of the second. Okay, well, so yeah, it's the
Vegas
must win for Florida. Pretty much. I mean, otherwise they're going to go down 3-0, which pretty much seal the deal.
Let's just get to this for Ivan Barbashev.
And then did you see
for Petrangelo?
Did you see? Obviously, they were out for Matichuk's head tonight, too. So. Head?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I figured that was going to be the case.
So, anyway. Yeah, but he came back apparently after that hard hit. So, is that what they're saying? That was the hard hit, hit in the first period.
Apparently, and it wasn't confirmed, and it definitely won't be. But there was rumors that Petrangelo sent a text message to Walt, Keith Tkachuk, are apologizing for what's going to end up happening to his son. I don't know if somebody was just saying some shit to like make us hate Petrangelo a little bit more or to add some animosity to this somewhat one-sided series so far, but I thought that was pretty damn funny. If that was true, that is like epic shit talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no doubt.
Reach out to the dad and be like, hey, I'm really sorry.
By the way, I'm going to fuck up your son.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds more like evidence to me of headhunting, but.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I don't believe it's true because like Petro and like, so he could, it could be in all like, it could be in the, like in a fun atmosphere, you know, obviously where he's kind of like just ribbing like, you know, Keith Tkachuk to be like, hey, but the NHL might not see it that way. They might take that seriously. You know what I mean? So
So unless Keith Tkachuk says, yeah, he's joking with me, I wouldn't buy it.
Well, I mean, it's not like, I don't think they're going to go out and, you know, like try to kill the guy, but he's definitely, you know, they're gonna be rough on him for sure. But you know, well, that's hockey, so you know, you lay down some rough hits, expect retaliation.
One's gonna go Tanya Harding on him and take out his knee with a pipe. You know, like that's not.
They're not
gonna
do that. But they will. You know, they'll be rough on the end of the ice. I mean, that's part of hockey. You know, retaliation is a, you know, it's part of the game. So you know, as long as it stays on the ice, you know, that's all that matters.
That's what I'm saying. They better be careful that they don't go too far then in this next game. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think they just landed a pretty hard hit on him, and that was about it. You know, I don't think it was anything too major because the fact that he came back out in the second period, so it wasn't like they, you know, concussed the guy.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's just get to that one question I have around this. Adam, we'll start with you here. Do you think Florida can still win this series?
No. The Knights have this locked up. There's no doubt in my mind.
I mean, they're leading 2-1 going into the third period in game
three. And the way they've been playing, they've been absolutely dominating this. Yeah, Petro gets to raise another cup, so lucky him. Lucky bastard. At least one cup you got to raise for us, so that's all that matters.
That's the one thing I love about OJ is he's just always the silver lining guy, right? Just like Petro gets to raise a cup, but so does Ivan Barbashev.
Yeah,
but it's exactly. So true,
good for him.
Don't get me wrong.
I'm happy for it, but you know, I'm just being a little bitter just because it is because I can be because he's all positive. I guess I need to just call OJ whenever I'm just being all bitter. I mean, Josh, maybe that's what you need to do since you're always in if you're in a fucking shitty mood or whatever, just call
mood or
like. But just think, Barbashev gets to lift the cup. I'm happy for him. It's like, wow. I feel so much better now.
Thanks, man. You make me feel so good.
Exactly.
So, I mean, there really is no point in focusing on the negatives if they're outside of your control, so right?
Positive. So, I guess that's true.
That is true, man. That is so, so true. Positive.
Damn it. No.
He needs to write a book.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah, that's the best industry of all time, self-help books. Holy shit.
Right, I know, right?
You need to write a sports self-help book.
We could, you know how to bullshit.
Yeah, like a sports analogy self-help book.
Yeah, yeah. When your team sucks, you need Rick to read this book, and he gets to cheer you up about how it's going to be all right.
Yeah. So,
you'd be selling a lot of books right now to some Blues fans, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably need to send one to myself.
For sure.
Anybody that? Well, let's get to our update for NBA our Straw Hat tournament. That tournament is still going on. Obviously, it is going to be game four, I believe, tomorrow night in Miami. Denver leads that series 2-1. I have the Denver Nuggets. Adam has Miami Heat. Good luck to you, Adam.
Thank you. I don't really need it, but.
You're gonna need it because the Nuggets.
It's gonna be a long series. You even confirmed it's gonna be a long series.
So I said in six, but let's be honest here. The Nuggets dominated game one, they dominated game three, and they were up by quite a bit in game two before they decided to blow it.
It's the same point though. In the first half of game three, it was pretty evenly matched.
It was pretty evenly matched. You're 100% right until they let Murray really get cooking.
Did it in for him.
Jokic, going into the end of the first half, Jokic was 3 assists away from a triple-double. Murray wasn't even – he had
a phenomenal game. I'm not going to take that away from him.
He wasn't in a triple-double, and he ends up with a triple-double. That was his second half. Yeah. So Jokic and Murray get a triple-double.
Yeah, he won 20-10, so – Yeah, so I mean, he had a phenomenal game. I'm not gonna take that away from the Joker for sure. He definitely did.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. The pick and roll game that they have is just, I think, too strong. And Miami's a scrappy team, but now listen, everything changes. Miami comes out and takes care of business in game four because now it's a 3-game series.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you, I think that Denver's out for blood at this point. Okay. So that's kind of what I'm feeling.
We'll see. They're still in it.
That is true.
We'll see how all right,
guys. Let's head to our sign off here. Adam, tell us what the socials. Tell the good listeners what our socials.
The great listeners of this wonderful podcast, the Hometown Losers. You know the drill. Check us out on facebook.com/thehometownlosers. LOUSERS. Or check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/hometownlosers. We'd love for you to follow us and share with your friends as well.
Absolutely. Give us that feedback. We love interacting with the listeners. If you have any questions or anything that you want us to talk about as well, please bring those forward for us. We would definitely love to have that interaction with you guys. OJ, let's go to your game of the week. What do you got for the game of the week for you?
Sunday at noon. So STLSC is playing the Los Angeles Galaxy. My game because...
Hold on. Well, we got to do it the right way, right?
Sunday. For some reason, when every other game's been at 7:30 on Saturday.
Yeah, they're doing a noon game, right?
Yeah.
It's noon a, on that was like Sunday. The one game that's a day game, which is really bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really playing, bizarre. And I mostly I pick STLSC because none of the Cardinals games are really big deals right now. Can't really call the game of the week if you're like in last place.
Touche. Yeah.
That is true. And it's really hard to like be like, hey, let's watch this random game where they're most likely gonna lose.
Right. At least we have some more skin in the game here. I mean, the next couple games, honestly, for St. Louis City SC are gonna be a little rough because we face LA and then we face Nashville the following weekend as well. So yeah, it's gonna
luckily
be a couple
this is the bad Nashville or LA team. The bad LA
Yes. Yeah, this is Galaxy.
Not
so.
FC.
That is true.
We'll probably catch FC at some point, too.
Yeah, we'll be facing them for sure.
Yeah.
That is a good point. I forgot this was Galaxy and not FC. That is correct. My bad.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
All good, man. Well, guys, as always, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate the listeners listening as well. I always look forward to Thursday and talking about sports, even though the Cardinals suck and it's painful. It is still fun to talk about sports and especially the St. Louis sports scene. So we appreciate you guys. We appreciate the listeners as well. And you can catch us here next week on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey guys, this is Adam. Just want to say thanks for listening to the Hometown Losers podcast. We'll see you next week as we continue our discussion of St. Louis sports.